Jan Van Paradise and I were asked to organize this session on the outer disk. And we first had to decide what we mean by outer disk. And we decided that this kind of schematic picture probably represents what the organizers had in mind. That is to say, you consider a black hole that's accreting through two different kinds of accretion processes. An outer region where you have mostly a thin accretion disk, a Shakura-Sunyaev-like disk, and something else on the inside. And the something else is probably a hot, optically thin, you know, different kind of a flow. And so we said that everything that's associated with this outer zone is what we would call the outer disk. We decided that, you know, we wouldn't discuss what kind of a disk this is. We said it would be a Shakura-Sunyaev-like disk, and fortunately we had Rashid in our session, so he kept us straight on the physics of this region, but with some complications, that this may not be a completely flat disk, it might be warped, it might have outflows, it might have a corona on top, and these are all complications that are suggested by observation. We discussed both AGN and black hole binaries. We tried to see what the observations are telling us, what can we do in terms of theoretical problems to suggest to Blanford, Lasota, and others for the black hole program. We had a broad outline of topics that we wanted to discuss, and we divided it up. Half of the topics were done by Jan as leader of the discussion, and half were done by me. So one of the first questions we asked was, if we really have these kind of two zones, where does the boundary occur? Where is this transition radius? Can we tell where it is from the observations, and can we say where it should be based on theory? So I'll just briefly discuss this because I think there is some good theoretical opportunities here. This is one of the areas where we think theorists should be becoming more active. We collected kind of, you know, we had a group of 15 or 20 people, and we collected all of our memories of what is known about this transition radius. And this is a rough summary of where we think we are today, both in X-ray binaries and in AGN. So in X-ray binaries, as you know, there are all these different spectral states that Gene Swank described. And basically, we believe that these different states are a sequence of luminosity, or mass accretion rate. The highest mass accretion rate is the so-called very high state, then there's the soft high state, an intermediate state, a hard low state, and a quiescent state. And we tried to think, what are the different ways that people have used to measure this transition radius, and what are the results? So here are the results. It appears that in these two states, the highest luminosity, the transition radius, you want to call it a transition radius, is very close to the black hole. In other words, there really is no transition for these systems. There's only one more or less thin disk, maybe it has a corona, but there is no separate inner zone for these particular states. And if you ask how are these radii determined, they're generally determined by spectral fitting. We heard about all the problems with spectral fitting. Yes, there are uncertainties, but probably the answer that is of the order of a few Schwarzschild radii is reasonable. Then you go to these intermediate and low state systems. And in the few cases where people have been able to measure this radius, it looks as if it's maybe in the order of 10, 20, few tens of Schwarzschild radii. And the best evidence seems to be coming from this reflection component. As you know, you can reflect the hard X-rays from the corona, and you can measure the solid angle that's subtended by the cold component, and it looks as if the solid angle is low in a few systems, Cygnus X1, Nova, Muskie, I think V404, SIG, etc. And then when you go to the really silent or very low luminosity system, the quiescent state, there are some very kind of rough indications that this radius may be much larger. For instance, from the X-ray delay that was measured in 1655 and modeling it, there is an indication that perhaps this transition radius is like 1,000 Schwarzschild radii or even larger. By looking at the H-alpha line, which is emitted by this disk, and looking at the wings of that line, you get some limit on the transition radius, and as Rashid pointed out in our discussion, it only is a limit because there may be regions of the disk that doesn't produce H-alpha, and whatever you measure here is only from the region that actually does produce H-alpha emission. Then we looked at the AGN systems, and again we kind of ordered them in luminosity. You can start with QSOs, CFERs, And then the low luminosity systems that Lewis Ho talked about, liners, narrow emission line galaxies, and the whole lot. And I think most people would agree that this thin disk component probably comes all the way down to the black hole in these two systems, the QSOs and CFERTs. Basically, it's from the existence of the blue bump. If you interpret the blue bump as due to black body radiation, just the temperature and the luminosity, etc., suggests that the thing is coming down to the black hole. In the CFERTs, as you know, there's this beautiful stuff on the iron fluorescence line. Just a big width tells you that you've got very large velocities down to a few Schwarzschild radii. And then it looked as if you start looking at the low luminosity stuff, and this is new work by Lewis Ho, still unpublished, I believe, you don't see a blue bump. You do see infrared flux, but there's no blue bump. So when you do the spectral fitting, it looks as if many of these systems have transition radii, which are going further up, tens of Schwarzschild radii, maybe hundreds. Very uncertain, all of these numbers. But I should mention, I don't think any one of these detections is really a solid, firm detection, but maybe there is some pattern here. And the pattern that we thought we were seeing is very schematically shown in this diagram, that as a function of luminosity, L in Eddington units, this transition radius seems to increase as you go to lower luminosity. So high luminosity is essentially at the marginally stable orbit, roughly, and as you go to lower luminosities, maybe the transition radius is going further out. There's no information really on how this curve, what's the shape of this curve. We really don't know whether this curve is the same for black hole binaries in the galaxy and the AGN. You know, there may be some mass dependence. These are all big uncertainties, and I think there's a lot of interesting work that could be done observationally. I believe if we can actually determine this curve, and for instance, if it turns out that there is a universal curve that's a function only of luminosity, that would be very powerful information. But I don't think we can claim that on the basis of what we know so far from the observations. So what is theory telling us? So clearly there is a theoretical problem now. Namely, if you believe that there is evidence for such a transition, you have to ask, why does this thin disk suddenly become something else? What might it be? And there are a couple of papers in the literature that have tried to tackle this problem. They are both, unfortunately, one-dimensional theories. This is really an intrinsically two-dimensional problem. Got a thin disk coming and then it becomes something else, optically thin. Clearly, you have to do both radius and z. It has to be done in a two-dimensional way. But there are these two very similar, in my mind, papers, but in some sense taking orthogonal points of view. Meyer and Meyer-Hoffmeister considered a thin disk. They only looked at the vertical structure at a given radius, and they considered how you might evaporate gas from a thin disk into a corona, and thereby eliminate the thin disk at a certain radius. And the evaporation is just like you make a corona in the sun or anywhere else. It's by thermal conduction and heating up the gas and producing hot corona. The other idea is Honma, and then Kato and Nakamura, and Shoji Kato gave a short presentation on this particular idea. This is in some sense, you can either call it height integrated, or you can say it's just a theory on the equatorial plane. So they did everything in radius. So they didn't worry about the Z structure at all. They just did it as a function of radius. And they considered how you might start with cold gas, and as you come in, it suddenly becomes hot gas. Again, by turbulent transport of energy outwards, evaporating the gas and making it hot. And the interesting thing from this work is that they actually give you a formula. There's a formula for how the transition radius varies as a function of viscosity parameter and the mass accretion rate. This coefficient is fairly small. I'm not sure that it would agree with the observation, but clearly there's work to be done here. So I would say, for the theorists, here is a nice problem. I think there's a good unsolved problem or partially solved problem. Much work needs to be done. I really believe if we could understand the 2D structure of the way this thing works, that would be quite a big advance in this subject. So this, you know, we discussed many different topics, but this was, I think, one kind of focused area where there seems to be some opportunity for theoretical work.
Done.
And observation.
Please, continue. Yeah, I was supposed to talk about the properties of the outer disks, and I will, in my summary of the discussion, limit myself mainly to the prime conclusion that we came to, which is that although we have a fair understanding of the observed properties of the outer disks in X-ray binaries, the question, do we really understand their structure, must be answered with not really. And as a result, I think any attempt to infer mass transfer rates into the disk on the basis of the properties of the outer disk are really shaky. Let me try to explain why my view is so pessimistic, although I think compared to the message that Ski Antonucci tried to get across on Monday, at least I got away with the impression, well, maybe there is no evidence at all for disks in AGNs. I think in the case of X-ray binaries, there is clear evidence, and I think nobody will contest that, for the presence of accretion disk. But the properties, as we infer them from observations, are hard to understand in terms of physics. Basically, in X-ray binaries, the outer structure of the disk, in terms of the observable properties, the luminosity that you see coming out of it, is completely dominated by irradiation of X-rays from the central X-ray source. That has major effects on the observed properties, their luminosities, etc., but also on their stability. If you look at where X-ray binaries are stable and where they are unstable as a function of m dot, what you find is that instability occurs at very low values of m dot. That is similar to what you see in cataclysmic variable, except that the transition, the critical m dot, below which you enter instability in the case of X-ray binaries, is an order of magnitude, at least, it's a little bit orbital period dependent, lower. And that can be understood to zero order by saying, well, the X-ray irradiation will make the disks hotter, thereby leading them into the zone of stability, if you believe that the S-curve type of instability that you see in cataclysmic variables also is acting in X-ray binaries. So from that point of view, there are certain things that we can understand. Now, the problem is if you try to see what the numerical properties are of the outer disks. And there are two particular problems that I would like to single out. One is that it looks like the angular thickness of the disk, as seen from the neutron star or black hole, is of order 20%, 10 degrees roughly. You get that number from numerical simulations of light curves and absolute magnitudes of irradiated disks. You get that number from statistics of eclipsing systems versus non-eclipsing systems. And you always end up with something like an opening angle of the order of 10 degrees. This opening angle is much, much larger than you can expect on the basis of the scale heights that you would want to be present in those relatively cool outer disks. Another problem that occurs is that in those numerical games that you can play to model the brightness of these disks, you end up with an X-ray albedo, the fraction of the incident X-rays on the disk that gets reflected back into space, is of order 95%. It's a ridiculously high number. There are various ways in which you can try to solve this problem, and they're all geometric, not physical. And I'll try to summarize them in a set of not too well-drawn cartoons. The kind of simple-minded toy model that I've loved to carry in my mind for many years, I think that's out. It's a model whereby you have a disk steadily turning up more and more, whereby every part of the disk can see the X-ray source, and whereby you have a total opening angle of plus and minus 10 degrees. It looks like this model is unphysical. Is this perhaps a possibility? One whereby you would have the opening angle, which, for instance, is determined by the amount of shadowing that the disk is doing of the X-rays onto the secondary star, having the the thick part of the disk being much more closer in. Is that perhaps a solution? If you want to talk about a model like this, you're running into the problem that only a very short, small part of the disk is irradiated, and it becomes a little bit difficult to understand the luminosities. So maybe what you have to end up with is add to a model like this some gas off the plane, which can, through scattering, make the outer disk hotter and contribute to the luminosity. Perhaps. Another possibility that we discussed was that perhaps the outer disk, its effective thickness and thereby its ability to see the X-ray source, is the result of warps. Now, you have to. I drew this a little bit sketchy and ugly, and that was on purpose, because clearly there is one source where we know warping occurs, that's Hercules X1, but that source has very specific observational properties in terms of the orbital modulation of the X-rays and the optical luminosity, and the, of course, the as it varies over the 35-day precessional cycle. So maybe you have here a combination of lots of attempts at regular warping, which sort of smears out in an azimuthally more or less steady thickness of the disk, which does what you hoped would be done in this simple way. Now, clearly, if the understanding of accretion disks becomes a question of such detailed geometrical effects, I think the problem is becoming really very hard to what we, at least I, for quite some time, thought it was. And I think it would be a nice topic for this institute to see what the real story on outer disks is. I would like to limit my summary of the discussions to this particular, in my mind, rather worrisome state of affairs in with respect to outer disks.
Thank you, Jan. May I propose that we go now for coffee, and with fresh forces at 11 sharp, we begin to ask four rapporteurs. All questions are permitted. Oh, I don't know. Okay.